they can meet them.
So the companies say, hey, we need billions of dollars. America needs intelligence. Hand over the money.
Right. Look, we've got this really neat product. We know you got a problem with, are your spies, are your agents that you're running on the ground in, let's say in Iran, are they reliable or not? You know, are you talking to, do you have some, you know, it's hard to keep track from all these guys. We can tell, we can help use our pattern analysis here to be able to see and keep you from going to the wrong people that we already have some flags on or other things. And look, you can get this solved for only whatever, $10 million, or it appears to be.
But
here's the cynical, more or less sign here.
I would think spying, though, is as much of an art or even more of an art than a science. I mean, you know, to say whether someone's telling the truth or not, I mean, I realize that there's things like lie detectors, and I'm not even sure these truth serums work. But at the end of the day, a company is saying, we can analyze the chess pieces better than you can and therefore tell who's telling the truth. But I don't know that they can, right? I mean, this is, I don't know that there's no magic.
Right, you're looking for patterns as to who is known for contact with whom, you know, who that person's been associated with. You're looking for the history of the person, the history of, you know, how well their intel has worked, or, and various things like that. So, you know, you're looking at a lot of different factors, and you're trying to collate that. That's just for this example. And so then they take it to their contracting officer, technical rep, and they say, look, here's what you need. Isn't this cool? If you can use this in your branch, we can make you look really good. And this helps meet your need, contract for it. And so so the companies are really in many ways starting to call the shots in the CIA. We're already seeing that go on in the Pentagon. It's what goes on with the Air Force, you know, and the big contractors saying, here's the weapon system you need. Look, we've got all the specs here. This is the coolest thing, and it'll solve all your needs. And
kind of
that's
hard
the type
to
of thing
know.
That's going on.
It's kind of hard to know who's in charge sometimes. Malin from New Jersey, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
I was just a little concerned with the. It seems though they have something which is political immunity or something thereof. Is that correct?
Great question. Is there immunity for these contractors if they were to, you know, not follow orders? I know, for example, the four guys from Blackwater. I think it was Blackwater that went to Fallujah and started a whole, you know, new battle in the war of Iraq. Is there immunity if these guys spy on the wrong people, or, you know, breach national security, or, you know, go and do things that they're not ordered to do? Are they protected, or can someone sue them?
That's an excellent question, because we haven't seen those things. We're just starting to see some of it litigated. I mean, for example, the involvement of Jepson, a subsidiary of Boeing, in the rendition flight, taking detainees, prisoners to the black sites. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit and had various people who were taken to the black sites, various detainees, join that lawsuit, claiming that the private corporations are liable. And so it's going to be interesting to watch that work its way through the courts. My guess is they'll use the CIA Act of 47, which basically gives the director of the CIA, and now it's director of national intelligence, the authority to override just about any laws in order to keep national security, to keep the country safe.
So even though they work for private corporations,
use that as a trump.
Even though they work for private corporations, they'll claim government immunity because of who's hiring.
Since they're doing on behalf of the government, I mean, I think that's the reason Blackwater is litigating the suit against the four family members, because they have a history of being a little bit more sympathetic to the families and treating them a little bit better. But they don't want to be held accountable as part for everything they do, because they're working in a theater of war.
Malin, you have another question.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I had seen several programs on television which had to do with times of emergency, which the government is preparing for, and for martial law there, if the government were to instruct martial law, or in whatever you call it, state martial law in the country, state police would work hand in hand. And, in fact, I seem to get the impression that the Blackwater police were working with the local police, but not really telling them exactly who they were, but they worked with a higher state authority than, say, just, you know, other state police.
I will ask that question to RJ, and I want to thank you very much for your call, Malin. Two very good questions. RJ, what about the preparation for martial law? I mean, is there any idea that these private corporations are working with our government for emergency circumstances where they might have to do something like that?
I believe there's some case, as I said, there, I believe that Schwarzenegger, governor of California, has an agreement with the company Blackwater to come in an emergency situation such as national disaster, say if the big one hit San Francisco, and help provide security and law and order, which we saw, you know, it did get out of hand in New Orleans. And the response, of course, the response was very ad hoc, including, you know, Blackwater sending its people down there. There was clearly not the command and control that everyone would like to see in place. And hopefully they're putting that in place in California, and citizens need to watch and make sure that that's occurring so that it is the government official that's calling the shots in the end.
Again, thank you, Malin, for two very, very good questions. Let me go to Eric in Vermont. Eric, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi, welcome.
How are you doing?
We're doing good. I got a terrific guest here. What's your question for?
Yes, you do. I'm absolutely just dumbfounded. Miss Hillhouse, am I correct, ma'am?
Yes, it's Dr. Hillhouse.
Dr. Hillhouse, I apologize. You're very interesting. You have seemed to have an awful lot of background. I have some dental problems. I'm going through dental stuff. I don't talk good. That's the way it is. I have a lot of questions regarding a lot of the domestic types of activities that may or may not be going on. You may or may not be aware of Rex 84 and some of the concentration camps that purportedly have been built around this country. And I was wondering if you had any sort of insight as to some of the staffing of those or anything related to that, and then I'll get off and let your wisdom and your knowledge and background speak for itself. Thank you.
Thank you
much.
For your call, Eric. Thank you.
Great person.
Thank you, Eric.
Dr. Hillhouse or RJ, any secret prisons in the United States? We know of some that are in Eastern Europe and abroad.
There are no secret prisons that I'm aware of in the United States, and that would kind of defeat the purpose of having secret prisons, because the whole idea is you have it out of U.S. Court jurisdiction.
So the whole purpose of them is so that
setting foot on U.S. soil. So
okay.
It wouldn't make that much sense to have one domestically, because then the courts and the, you know, the multiple layers of government would try to get involved. So I would be quite shocked if there were such.
Okay. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, I've got a question for you, and that is, how do we ever know whether the private contractors are choosing the right people? I mean, to work for the government, to work for the CIA, even to work, as I did, for the House of Representatives, they put you through a background check. How do we know that there aren't spies within these contracting organizations? That'll be my question when we come back. Folks, if you want to call in, the toll-free number, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. A place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robertson. After time, after time, and it goes back for years, you know. Let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that reached that pyramid.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes. It was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Final segment I have with Dr. R.J. Hillhouse. She is the author of Outsource. It is a novel about the mercenaries that work in the war on terror. And obviously, it is, although it is fiction, it is based on exactly what is going on in Iraq and in the war on terror. R.J., I wanted to ask you about how we know whether or not these people hired by the corporations are themselves trustworthy.
One is many of those people are the people who used to work for the CIA and for these very same government agencies that are now in the private corporations. And they all go the same type of background, regular background checks. But the interesting thing is, of course, the background checks that are also what's going on throughout the government are based on rooting out foreign agents and agents of terrorist organizations, but they're not looking at that possibility.
I was thinking of Aldrich Ames. Wasn't he trying just to make money off of selling
right.
secrets?
Yeah.
So that's the fear, people who are just have their hands in the government's pockets and might indeed become spies to the other side, not because they believe in Islamic fundamentalism, but because they can cash in from Islamic fundamentalism.
Yeah, and one big concern I have is what happens on down in their luck spies when one company loses a contract to another company. It's like a giant game of musical chairs, and there are never enough chairs as when the music started, and someone's always left standing or unemployed, and what do these unemployed spies do? I mean, their services are for hire, and of course they could be for hire by foreign interests or interests of terrorist organizations, and that issue needs to be looked at rather seriously.
People in the chat room, we have a chat room here at the Head On Radio Network, are asking a little bit more about the secret camps. While you say there aren't any in the United States, you don't deny that there are a number of secret camps that are abroad, do you?
I think we're talking about the black sites, the
right.
CIA prisons that Bush claimed were emptied out last September. It's my personal belief that they do still exist, and that's what I'm much more comfortable in discussing in fiction. And if they would still exist, how I would posit the way to have them continuing existing and get around the Hammadi versus Rumsfeld Supreme Court case, which might refresh people's memory. Last year, the Supreme Court found that the constitutional guarantees of habeas corpus and others had to be extended to detainees, even if they were held by the CIA, even if that were abroad in other jurisdictions. So the way to solve that, and the way I write about it in Outsourced, is by simply privatizing the prisons, because then it's not the government that's holding the detainees. So, and the corporations, of course, don't have the same requirements to extend constitutional guarantees to detainees.
So even if it is illegal under the Supreme Court decision for the U.S. military to hold Mr. X in a secret prison in Romania. It may be legal for the U.S. government to hire Blackwater to hold Mr. X in a secret prison in Romania.
I've never heard Blackwater implicated.
I'm just trying to get an example.
Corporation X to provide site security for the black sites, or Corporation Y to provide facilities management for the black sites, would in theory be one way to work around the Constitution if one wanted to keep these open. Or
wow.
To attempt to work around the Constitution.
I've got Bob from Massachusetts on the line. Bob, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark, and hi to your guest, Ajay.
Hi.
I have a question. My question has to do with Blackwater. After viewing the movie, what do you call it, Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, there was a little bit of information in there about how the founder of Blackwater, Eric Prince, is a Christian fundamentalist who happens to have married into the Amway family with Dick DeVos. He married Dick DeVos' sister. What I'm wondering, what my question has to do with, is how far has the Christian right, the fundamentalist, infiltrated our security services, and what kind of effect could that have in the future when our security services will be basically doing their bidding?
That's a great question, Bob. Dr. Hillhouse?
You know, I really don't think that it has at all. And I think the religion or the faith of Mr. Prince has been manipulated for political gains here. He is a devout Roman Catholic. I mean, I've talked to people about him who've known him and interacted with him. And I know that some have said that in the management of Blackwater, that it's, you know, some kind of a fundamentalist or crusader Christian organization. And I don't think it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, I know several people who've worked there, et cetera, and that is not the corporate culture by any means.
Well, I'm just wondering, because I forgot the name of the general. You may remember, RJ, the general that talked about a crusade.
Boykin.
Yes, Boykin, of course. I'm sorry, that's exactly the person I was thinking of. I wonder to what extent there are people that join up in the war on terror, not necessarily to be a patriotic Americans defending our country, but because they have some idea of religious hegemony and they want to promote that. Do you see that going on?
Or is Boykin really the exception rather than the rule? He was a class to himself.
Those
who have known him would agree. He was also quite competent in many ways, and that's how he was able to rise to the level that he did in serving his country.
So he's the exception rather than the rule.
I think that really is more the exception. There's nothing that gives me the willies faster than the Christian right. If they seem to have infiltrated this, I would be one of the first people screaming about it. But I haven't seen any sign of it. And I think in the case of Blackwater, I think it's been grossly exaggerated.
Okay, fair enough. Another thing that people are writing about in the chat room here is a program called Rex 84. I've never heard of it. I don't know what you know about it.
I don't know anything about it. Sorry to disappoint.
Okay, fair enough. I hadn't heard of it either, but a number of people writing in. Folks, there's only a few minutes left, but if you have information on it and you want to call in, please do so. So one of the things you write in your materials is that up to 75% of our personnel working abroad in places like Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, are not CIA, but indeed hired by the CIA. How do we monitor their loyalty? I mean, how do we know who these people are working for? Obviously, they say they're working for us, but how can we know if they're not indeed working for a foreign government as well?
Well, they wouldn't get any follow-on contracts, that's for sure. People would be jailed.
Well, I mean secretly, obviously,
openly. They're generally, the people who go into this are patriotic, loyal Americans. The majority of people, I don't think there's any worry. I think it's the same worries that we would have that, you know, as I said, the unemployed people, the corporate conflict of interest. I think that is a much larger concern than people working for the enemy. I think that would not be as big of an issue.
Okay, so the real concern then is corruption. The real concern is not so much working for the enemy, but corruption. People who are claiming that we need all these military things that we don't need and taking billions of dollars of taxpayer money because that's their loyalty to their corporation rather than to the government.
Right. I think the real issues that we need to guard against are corruption, are these conflicts of interest, of the potential manipulation of U.S. foreign policy through manipulation of the president's daily brief and others. And that's the type of thing that I've written about in Outsource.
Dr. Hillhouse, I want to thank you very much for coming here on the program. You've got about a minute left. Is there anything else that I haven't covered that you want to make sure my listeners know about?
I think the best place I could steer your listeners is, as I said, to take a look at Outsourced in order to think about how and see how we're actually fighting the war on terror. It's a very real spy novel, and I've heard that back from people in the Pentagon as well as from CIA. People have been shocked as to how different it was and how realistic. And at the same time, I would suggest people to go to my website, thespywhobuildme.com.
The spy who B-I-L-L-E-D me.com.
Where I regularly cover these topics.
Terrific. And you can, by the way, folks, there's a link to the Amazon site where you can buy Outsourced from my website at radioinsidescoop.com. Thank you very much for your insight and for coming here on the show, Dr. Hillhouse. And tune in next week for more of the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Minnesota started creeping to the right. Taxes bad.
This is the Quality News Network. At the end of trading this week on Wall Street, the Dow Jones rallied, ending up more than 140 points at today's close. We'll have the final numbers coming up in our business block. The U.S. military commander in the southeast region of Iraq says it would be a, quote, giant step backward to pull out U.S. troops from the region by the end of the year because the Iraqi forces are not ready. Yesterday, Republican Senator John Warner, just back from a trip to Iraq, said he recommended to President Bush that he start a U.S. troop pullout by Christmas. The Los Angeles Times reports today that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, is expected to recommend a large U.S. troop cut to President Bush. Pace may advise a troop reduction of nearly half because keeping more than 100,000 troops in Iraq through the end of next year would be a strain on the military. However, Pace responded today that the article was, quote, speculative. Also, according to the U.S. military, since the troop surge occurred, the number of Iraqi detainees held by the U.S. in Iraq has gone up by 50%. There are now 24,500 detainees, most of whom are Sunni Arabs. In Afghanistan, three British troops were killed by a bomb dropped from a U.S. fighter plane. They were taking part in a NATO operation against the Taliban. A Marine drill instructor in San Diego has been charged with 225 criminal counts of physically abusing recruits. Two other drill sergeants have also been charged in the case. NFL player Michael Vick filed his plea agreement today in which he admitted to bankrolling a dog fighting ring. The Atlanta Falcons quarterback was able to avoid the potentially more serious charges. In Jackson, Mississippi, the elder Ku Klux Klansman recently convicted of murdering two black teenagers more than four decades ago was sentenced today to three life terms. More thunderstorms have hit parts of the Midwest already soaked by rain. A strong storm went through the Chicago region late Thursday. In Greece, massive wildfires have killed at least 15 people. Many of the dead were trapped in their cars. Thousands of acres of forest have been destroyed. The U.S. Forest Service says it doesn't have enough money to clean up the trash left behind by park visitors. 40% of the agency's budget goes to fighting wildfires. This is the Quality News Network.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm washing my car. You want to help?
No, I don't want to be a polluter.
Whoa, I'm not polluting. I'm just washing my car.
If your car wash water is going down the street and into the bay, then you're a polluter.
Oh, really?
I'll help you clean this up, but what you should do next time is go to a local car wash.
You pay money?
Pay money for them to recycle the water and keep all that pollution out of the bay. I think it's really worth it.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
In the past year, sales of the so-called morning after pill have nearly doubled. That's after the federal government decision to allow anyone over the age of 18 to purchase the emergency contraceptive without a doctor's order as long as they have proof of age. A study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition finds that fear of new foods may be inherited. The research involved twins who were questioned on their willingness to give new foods a try. A 17-year-old New Jersey teenager claims to have broken the code that ties the new Apple iPhone to the AT&T wireless network. He claims he is using the iPhone on T-Mobile's network. New York City taxi drivers may hold a two-day strike next week. They are protesting new technology requirements such as GPS and credit card processors. The Commerce Department reports that big-ticket factory orders were up nearly 6% in July. That is the largest increase in 10 months and more than analysts had expected. New home sales were up 2.8% in July, according to the Commerce Department. Sales improved in the West and South. Gold is trading at $667.50 an ounce today. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.09 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones was up 143 points at 13,378. The NASDAQ was up 35. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
God, it's hot. Seems like that sun won't ever go down. Even way up here on the mountain, it is hot. Hot out here on the front porch. Even the guitar's hot. Waiting for the sun to start on down. Got that old earthenware jug with the dry corn cob stopper. Gonna cuss and discuss and talk. See what all y'all think. Mercy. I think it's gonna be a hell of a night here on the porch. At least that's how I plan it. You know me, old Bob, sitting here on the rocking chair. Old Bob got old Blue down here with him. Old Blue, he don't get around like he used to. Say it again, Blue. That's right, that's right. Blue's a beagle. He's a blue tick beagle, Blue is. But this is the Front Porch Edition, newly initiated, the Front Porch Edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Y'all welcome up on the front porch. Ain't got much for cooling except maybe a cold glass of sweet iced tea, maybe a cold beer for those who favors the harder stuff, and then there's that jug, but God, that's hot going down too. Never been 140 proof. You can cool off as best you can. We got a few fans left over from the last trip we had to make down to the funeral parlor. You know them funeral parlor fans. We snuck away with a few from the Third Apostolic Holiness Temple and Herpetological Sanctuary as well. Lord, we're going to be busy tonight. We are, we are, we are. Because, you know, the last few nights we've been talking about that Chinese garbage coming into the United States. What I like to call the Union. And you heard that chopstick story, right? I know you did. That chopstick story about that one manufacturer over in China got busted. Got busted for, what was it? Doing 100, recycling 100,000 sets of chopsticks a day. Basically just turning them around, recycle my rear end. That ain't recycling, that's turning it around after it's been in somebody's nasty mouth and giving it a quick wipe off, packaging it up and sending it back out. And, you know, that was kind of sickening. It was. But I tell you what, when I got to thinking about it, it got even sicker. Because I'm a sick guy, I guess. You know what's even sicker about that story? 100,000 used chopsticks don't just come out of nowhere. That fella had to get those 100,000 sets of used chopsticks from somewhere. And he was in where, Beijing? Where the Olympics gonna be? 100,000, was it per day? 100,000 sets of filthy used chopsticks per day? Somebody do the math. I ain't so good at the math. How many restaurants you reckon it would take inside of Beijing to come up with 100,000 pairs of used chopsticks every day? Every blessed day. Reckon it's safe to say that every single restaurant in Beijing is using recycled chopsticks? Come on over, Olympic athletes! Oh, you're going to love that salmonella. Yeah, baby, Szechuan salmonella. No, I'm not. Really. A 100,000 sets of used chopsticks per day. That's 200,000 individual chopsticks. And you figure, you know, what's a restaurant go through? Restaurant goes through, I don't know. You see, let's say it's a real fast food organization there in Beijing. They, what, maybe serve 1,000 people a day? So that's 2,000 chopsticks. Well, we've only got 2,000 individual chopsticks. So that means we've only got 198,000 chopsticks to go. This is where the real factor kicks in, isn't it? And maybe, you know, maybe he's not just, maybe this guy wasn't just recycling chopsticks from, restaurants. Maybe he was recycling them from roadside stands. Maybe he was recycling them from homes. And the point here, and it kind of works alongside of what our good buddy Clyde was talking about in his column. The point of this is that the Chinese government, this capitalist miracle run amok in a fascist dictatorship, because it is, can't even monitor the basic health needs of its people inside its own capital city. Something as seemingly simple as making sure that nobody's recycling chopsticks. Been on the floor, maybe, you know, you reach back with the butt end of it and scratch behind your ear. God only knows. But the Chinese government cannot even so much as monitor the chopsticks in the capital city, and yet every day, God only knows what, comes into ports in Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, and fans out across the fruited plain. And again, for me, this isn't about Chinese people. This isn't about Chinese culture. God knows the people chained to the tables in China are far more victimized than the American people are. This is about trade and how trade is conducted and what lengths we will go to and what horrors we will subject the American people and the Chinese people to in order to maximize trade. International globalist trade. Don't worry. Guitar player's just taking a minute. He's got the corn cob out of the jar and he's out of the jug and getting himself a swig. He'll be back. You know how it is. That guitar playing is sweaty work. But that's, you know, that's a starting place. But for me, the issue of this stuff that we're finding out is poisoning America is very serious. Because you never know when it's going to turn deadly or how deadly it's going to turn. Frankly, there is so little inspection that... do you remember that, what was it, late 70s, early 80s maybe? I don't remember exactly when. You remember the Tylenol scare? Remember that? What, 5-10 people died from poisoned Tylenol? And that's within... That's within the American system where we actually pay attention to safety and sanitary and consumer safety concerns. Right? There are no such ties. There are no such organizations. Nothing. Over in the capitalist dictatorship that is the People's Republic of China. Nothing. Nil. Nothing like that. And so, how easy would it be for some disgruntled person to poison an entire supply of toothpaste? Or an entire mill run of old pajamas? Wouldn't be very difficult at all, would it? I see this as serious. I see this as disturbing. Other people think it's funny, though. I give you America's truth detector, the oxymoron, Flush Flemball, quoted on the page over at BartCop.com today, who said... For your little kids out there, if you have a Barbie, don't lick Barbie, because she could have lead in there. In where, Rush? In where, you filthy-minded freak? In there? Oh, you can tell where Rush's mind's going, because he's never really looked at a Barbie. There's no in on a Barbie. She doesn't have a belly button, innie or outie. There might be lead in there. Har, har, har. Boy, that's funny. But see, they have to make fun of it because they are intimately associated with the fact that just as Chinese steel coming to the U.S. went from 10,000 tons... in, 2002 to 690,000 tons in 2007. Well, you know, I'm sorry. You can't blame that one on Bill Clinton, can you? Oh, yeah, sure. World Trade Organization, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, yada, yada, yada. Most favored nation status, blah, 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 blah. But we had to start taking more products from China when we started hanging bad paper on China and putting the entire future of the American dream on the easy revolving payment plan with the capitalist dictatorship of the People's Republic. For you little kids out there, if you have a Barbie, don't lick Barbie because she could have lead in there. Oh, I'm America's truth detector. I'm bringing you the truth with one half of my Oxycontin-addled brain tied behind my back. Doggies. That's some high-quality entertainment, that Rush Limbaugh. Lordy. $29 million a year for making dirty jokes about little girls licking Barbies. I guess I just don't have what it takes. Because I can't be that funny on the fly. And I can't write it that well either. I couldn't come up with, hey, you little kids out there, if you have a Barbie, don't lick Barbie because she could have lead in there. I couldn't come up with that on my best day. I could sit here and honk on this earthenware jug with the 140 proof corn squeezings in it all night long, and I wouldn't come up with nothing near as funny as, for you little kids out there, if you have a Barbie, don't lick Barbie because she could have lead in there. I'm just not that funny. What was that, Agnes? That's right. Of course, he didn't say what Ken might have. And as Bart Cop notes, he attributes the quote to Rush, who licks Kens and not Barbies. Gee whiz. So to me, the idea, and to liberals and progressives, the idea of little children who are being taught good oral hygiene by brushing their teeth and wind up in a casket somewhere with a weeping mother and father over the casket because they've been poisoned by off-brand Chinese toothpaste, secreted into the United States and marketed under the brand name of Gilchrist and Soames and handed out in some of the finest hotels in America. Oh my God, Rush, have you brushed with Gilchrist and Soames? Might explain a whole bunch. You get a little crazy when kidney failure begins to set in. Right, Agnes? And that's what propylene glycol does. You brushing your teeth after every Rush, let me get you some toothpaste, buddy. Brush better. Oh, no, you haven't brushed long enough, Rush. Mm-mm. No, sir. So that's where we'll begin this evening. We're joined right now, however, by our good friend Alan Trucker. Alan, welcome to the front porch.
Hey, Bob, I love that music.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, I was thinking it's no longer the People's Republic of China. It's Corporations Republic of China, I guess.
Yeah, I think that probably is it. It's the Corporate Republic of China.
Yeah, it's gone a long ways away from the people. It's turned out to be like another fascist state, I guess.
Yeah, it's certainly not a communist dictatorship anymore. It certainly looks a lot more like a corporatist dictatorship. Better word, you think? Shall we start calling it that?
I didn't hear that last part.
I said, shall we start calling it that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. It's same with this place here, our country.
Oh, it sounds like you must be on the road today.
Yeah, and I've got to head through the mountains, so I won't be able to listen to your whole show because I won't be able to pick it up in these Pennsylvania mountains.
Oh, so you're up in PA, are you?
Yeah, that's a beautiful state.
Yeah, it is. It sure is.
Cooler. Hey, look, let me tell you that today's Democracy Now! Has two issues in it that's really good that you would like. One is about the Siegelman case, and the other one is about mountaintop removal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you might want to download that and listen to it.
I will. I'll give it a listen this weekend. I get all my extraneous listening done on the weekend, Alan, because that's about the only time there's a chance for it.
Uh-huh. Well, it makes me sick what happened to Don Salem, because I met him a few months ago, and he seemed like a really nice, honest man, and now he's sitting in jail because of Republicans wanting to get back at him because he's a Democrat. That's the only reason I can figure out.
Yeah, well, this may... It hasn't gotten nearly the publicity that it deserves, Alan, but the Siegelman case may actually be the single biggest, most effective dirty trick that Karl Rove ever engineered.
It needs to get out there.
It does. It does indeed.
I guess I better get off the phone because I'm...
Yeah, it sounds like we're about to lose you. You drive careful and get home safe, all right, Alan?
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Good man, that Alan. A lot of good folks running truck all over the country. Not a job I could ever do. I get scared to death driving down an icy road in my own vehicle. I can't imagine having a whole bunch of semi behind me and trying to make time to get where I'm going in the middle of a snowstorm, something like that. No, there's a lot of different places for us to go this evening. I just thought I'd start because I was sitting there thinking about the 100,000 Chinese toothpicks. Toothpicks? Chopsticks. Jesus. I was thinking about the 100,000 Chinese chopsticks and what a fellow would have to do to come up with 100,000 used chopsticks per day. If it was per day. Look, you know what? It's not much more reassuring if it's per week or per month, per year. It's used chopsticks. And they had to come from somewhere. I mean, how would you feel if you heard a story come out saying that McDonald's had been busted for recycling drinking straws? Ew! Not saying that they have or anything. But it's along the same lines. You know. So I tell you what, I mean, that's where we are. You know, guitar player going over on the end of the porch, fanning ourselves with the Baptist air conditioners. Sun still beating down, waiting for the sun to drop down so maybe it'll cool off a little bit here on the mountain. And you're welcome on the front porch. You know, it's always, I don't need a particular day when folks are welcome to call in like the right-wingers do. You know, they'll pontificate for 4 days, and on the fifth, they'll let you have your say. It's always your say here. But the front porch is a little bit different. The front porch is where we all get together at week's end and all talk amongst ourselves. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free. If you can carry the freight on your own, it's 304-658-5453. And we can, I got chairs. I got chairs for four more people on the front porch. Come on up. Light them up. We'll take a break and come back. This is America's liberal voice. This is America's front porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Now they got some crazy little women and I'm gonna get us some.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Past the hour, and we're off to a rolling start. I just love that stuff. Technically, that's not just a slide. That's a national steal. The National Steel's name, by the way, of that particular artist is Lead Bessie, because that's Kent Duchesne, who is one of Agnes's favorites. Whenever we get down to Alabama at the time, and it's been years, for the WC Handy Music Festival there in my hometown, Kent Duchesne is who Agnes always wants to go and see. Let's go to the phones. Let's work with our analogy here. Let's bring Gene up onto the front porch. Grab a chair, Gene.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, doing pretty good. How about you?
Oh, well, I got a reality hangover.
How's that?
Well, it's just weird. I zip to the store, right, and I come back, and I'm going through my mail, which, you know, I get this stupid piece of mail from Bank of America. Oops. Sorry.
That's okay.
And, of course, they're trying to give me another credit card. Last thing I need is another credit card. I'm intentionally going to shred this thing up, of course, but it's like, there's been some talk lately. It's like, well, nobody yet forces you to sign those cards and all that stuff. It's like, you know, it's fine. On the paper ones, it's easy to resist them. You know, you can just put it away, you know, shred it later, that kind of thing. But the ones that they send you over the internet that they keep nagging you every time you log into your bank.
Oh, yeah.
And I keep wondering to myself, it's like, why is it up to me to tell them, though? I mean, this is my bank. They know exactly where, how much money I have, how much income I take, and so on and so forth. Why are they trying to sell me these things? I mean, it just drives me nuts. Because it's my responsibility to tell them now. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's not like you couldn't find them if you suddenly decided you urgently needed a credit card.
Oh yeah, and it's just like when it's my bad decision, I have to eat it.
Yeah.
But when it's their bad decision, they, you know, it's like, well, it's no big deal.
Well, when it's their bad decision, $36 billion gets pumped into Wall Street in the course of a week, like what happened last week.
Like,
sure.
Where's the reciprocity here, man? It's like corporations are supposed to be human beings.
You know, it's one thing to get those offers for a credit card, though. What's more disturbing are the someday when you win the lottery or whatever, Gene, you'll find that they start and you get to a certain level with your credit rating, they start just sending you the card.
Oh, great!
call now. Activate this card, and when it goes a little bit higher, because they used to do this to my dad all the time. He got so worked up about it that he went and bought himself a shredder because it made him so nervous. They wouldn't just send the credit card. They would send credit checks in the mail.
Oh, I'm getting those too.
Where all you got to do is walk into a bank and sign it, and bang.
I know. I get those. I get the credit cards. You know, pre-approved. All that. It's like my income isn't going up. All I'm doing is making my regular payments on time. It's like it's not like.
Well, see, they've got you confused with the multimillionaire Gene.
Yeah, right. It's like, I need a gold business card. You're right.
Platinum, man, platinum. Hold out for the platinum.
Actually, that's what this is.
Oh, no.
$75,000, no big deal. It's like, shred.
Well, I'll be honest. You know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for Liza, our 5-month-old granddaughter, to get her first credit card offer.
Oh, sure. Either that or sign up ISIS for a card.
Yeah, we could do that. You know, sign up the dog.
Yeah, or the cat. You know. Yeah.
Oh my God! And the thing is, they'd probably give the cat a card.
Oh, they would. As long as parents come.
Oh, but then she'd go off on a catnip binge, and it's just ugly, Gene. I got to tell you, it's just ugly when that cat's whacked on catnip.
Oh, I know. I've seen them. They just sit there and drool, and you know, we ought to declare war on cat drugs.
Exactly.
I had to call in and rant and get that off my chest. Cause like, why do I have to?
Exactly. Oh, you know, and you know, let's not kid ourselves. When you open that little envelope and you pull that thing out and it says you're pre-approved and it's just waiting for you for at least a second, there's a little thing that goes through your head and goes, I'm going to do this.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh,
because
yeah.
we all really do live with that devil Fred Flintstone and the angel Fred Flintstone living on either shoulder. And he's up there and he's whispering in your ear, take it, take the money and run, go, take it.
And it's even worse on the internet when you get the screen that pops up and says, just a click, you know, it's like you battle for a year not to press the one day. It's like, God, I really need a new computer. God, I'd really like to have this, or I'd really like to have that. Oh man,
you asked earlier. How do they expect to make more money on you? Because they know what your financial situation is. The way they expect to make money on you is in fees and in late fees and in annual fees, stuff that doesn't even relate to anything that you buy.
Oh, I know. It just kills me because you get these right rings out here that call in, well, it's their fault for signing up, or it's their fault for clicking. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, you've resisted for a year or 2 years or 5 years or it's like one day, you know. It's like,
and they're counting on that because please understand, Gene, that they've got a phalanx. You know, there are psychologists, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Who you would expect, you know, who in a better world would be out there actively trying to help people who are hurting. But in this case, they're not. The banks... You know, they employ psychologists who work in tandem with statisticians and actuaries, and they figure out, and they sit around and they spend their days working on ways to get you trapped in the system. It's like what would happen if the pusher outside the schoolyard had an organization of hundreds of people trying to figure out ways to get school kids hooked on drugs. It's the same thought process.
Yeah. And we could take that. It's like, of course, there's a war on drugs. I mean, look, you prep them and you prep them to do all that stuff anyway. I mean, just because they go out and buy crack instead of your product, this whole I'm beginning to
the whole economy's crack, Gene.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, it's like you're just mad because, you know.
There's chocolate crack and automobile crack, and there's McMansion crack.
I
was talking about TVs and I did a lot of navel gazing last night during the show that I probably ought not have done. But I know because I've done it myself. I'm guilty, 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 guilty. When the microwave oven burns out, we unplug the whole microwave oven and take it and get rid of it or give it away to somebody who will fix it or whatever. And we go and buy a new microwave oven because it's cheaper to buy the whole daggum oven than it is to spend all the time figuring out how you got to get into the guts and then finding the bulb and pulling the bulb and finding out which bulb you got and blah, 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 blah. And by the time you're done, it was cheaper to buy the new oven. And that's something that has been deliberately done to the American people, Gene. Deliberately done.
Oh yeah, it just drives me up a wall to see, and I'll be the first one with that. I tend to go that route. I mean, I can remember people telling me, I don't even worry how to cook. Go buy it out of a box. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Go get a new one. Just get a new one.
Yeah, get a new one.
TV burns out. Go get a new one.
And then you do what you've done. You do basically what they told you to do, and then they turn around and say, you should have done that.
But then you find out the true cost that's behind that sort of thing. Well, this is the front porch, Gene, so stand by for just a second. We'll bring our second front porch. We got Susan coming up onto the porch.
Hi, Bob. Hi, hey, Gene.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Hi.
I guess our guitar player got sore fingers or something.
What?
I said, our guitar player got sore fingers.
Oh, well.
Your dog is still working there, Bob. Give it a chance.
That's true. That's the big secret. It's actually old Blue playing the guitar.
You are going to catch it big time, Bob.
Sure I am.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to call in because I am also one of the, I'm like Gene. Yeah, we are. Well, we're on food stamps. Yeah, we're, and we keep getting these things from our mortgage holder, our bank. Yeah. Take this platinum card. We want you to borrow some more money from us.
Yeah.
Still there?
Oh yeah, everybody's here, Susan.
It's just. And I think the reason they hit us up so hard is because when we got our mortgage, we went through a bank. And then that bank turned around and sold it to to Countrywide.
Did they really?
Yes, they did. So our mortgage is now held by Countrywide, but we didn't apply to them. We went through a bank, so we've actually got a credit rating.
But I wonder, I mean, have you received any notices from them or anything, Susan?
Oh, tons of them. They want us to borrow big-time money.
No, I know they do that. I know they want you to borrow and stuff, but have they sent you any notices, dear borrower, we're broke?
No, nothing along those lines. I doubt if they would admit it if they were down to their last shekel. I might get a notice saying you have 5 hours to pay up your entire loan.
Well, that's one of the things that I'm kind of worried about is with these things, and I don't know the answer to it, do these lenders, even if you didn't originally do business with them, do they have the right to accelerate the mortgage at any point? Is that in the fine print
anywhere?
Not mine.
Not mine. Because I'm one of the people who actually reads the contract.
So you're on a fixed
30.
Then?
What?
You're on a fixed then?
I'm on a 30-year fixed mortgage, and it cost me extra when we were getting it, but I insisted on it because I knew this was coming.
Well, I've never balloons or arms or variable rate have always seemed sort of dodgy to me.
Yeah, it's I got this great buy on a car, the shady character selling you this hot car.
Right, and that's what it was. It was shady characters selling hot mortgages. I think I mentioned the other night The guy on CNBC, Jim Cramer, referenced 14 million people have taken out these dodgy mortgages in the last 3 years alone.
Yeah. And if you've got one of them, if at all possible, refinance it quick to a, even if it costs you extra, refinance it quick to a fixed.
Right.
Because you will pay big time if you don't.
Well, I live in an apartment, so I'm lucky that way until they throw them out of here anyway.
But one of the reasons I called in, and Agnes said you covered this yesterday. I don't know if I get the reason I was going to mention it is because the Seattle News, there was a thing on MSNBC. They were having a thing, a big argument about one of the Seattle newspapers published pictures of the two people who were seen photographing the ferry in Seattle.
Now, see, I did. I hit that right at the end of the program last night as sort of, your nightly dose of terror before bed. But I did not see the photographs, Susan. You have seen them?
Yeah. Okay, first of all, I am that rare creature. I'm a native Seattleite. I used to ride those ferries all the time. And being a ferry junkie, I went around photographing them. The doors, all sorts of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever came up to me and said, you can't do that. Nobody ever looked at me funny. Of course, I'm fish belly white, too.
No, I haven't heard that phrase in a while, so, yeah, okay, I get it. So were the people in the photographs disturbingly Muslim-looking?
They were, they could have been. They might have been Indian. They were definitely brown.
And photographing while brown, they were dressed in suits?
Yeah. They were definitely not your, they didn't look like they were casing the joint. These things are tourist attractions.
Well, could they possibly have been from Dubai Ports World thinking about buying the port of Seattle and all the ferries doing business?
Good God, yes. But one of the things that bothered me about the thing on MSNBC was this one newscaster, I don't know who it was a woman, she was saying, well, if these men are innocent, turn themselves in. And I'm saying to myself, for God's sake, don't do that. Head for the Canadian border. If you turn yourself in, you're going to end up in Gitmo.
Or worse.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the secret 6x3 cells that we maintain in Syria or Jordan or Romania or, yeah, one of those.
Innocent or not.
Yeah.
Excuse me, what happened to innocent until proven guilty? I mean, why is it there? It goes back to that same, why is it much... Yeah, why is it my fault?
With the bushies.
Yeah. Well, I know, but I mean, it's like you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. I know that's not true for the, I know the bushies don't subscribe to it, but God, that's scary because it's like.
Well, you ask, there's more to the question you asked there, Gene, than meets the eye. And it is it's a really legitimate question because for the people who are in the concentration camp down at Guantanamo, innocent till proven guilty doesn't apply because technically they are not on U.S. soil. And that's what all the fighting all the way up to the Supreme Court's been about, in part. They're not on U.S. soil, so the Bush administration has argued that not one blessed letter of the Constitution applies to them.
Well if they're...
Go ahead, Gene.
Okay, go ahead, Gene.
But what I find disturbing about this is that if the reporter asked if they're innocent, they should turn themselves in... It's like, wait a minute. You're an American citizen, right? You should know that it's not up to them to prove their innocence. You know, it's the question that she asked that I find so... Yeah, it's like, I mean, I could... on the Gitmo thing, I mean, it's just... I get that. It's outside of the border. But, I mean, to say something like that in this country and just assume... that people aren't going to go, huh?
I just went, say what?
Well, the best part of the story that I read yesterday, and granted, I've mentioned on a number of times, guys, that, I don't mean guys, Susan, but you know what I mean. I've mentioned on a number of occasions that I get these email alerts from right-wing websites.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the Seattle terror fairy story came from one of these right-wing websites. And the best part of it, well, the two best parts of it is, one, you go two or three paragraphs into the story, and you get this, and it says in bold letters, editor's note, and then in red letters it says, be prepared for terror. Order an emergency alert radio right now from, you know, name of the website. You need this for the next terror attack in case they take out your electricity grid. So that was the first part. Using this story to hustle the radio. And then secondly, at the bottom of the story, and I did mention this on air, it said ferry service was suspended on Wednesday, briefly, when passengers pointed out a suspicious-looking package on the ferry.
It was somebody's lunch.
I figured as much. It was a terrorist corned beef with Swiss and mustard on rye.
Well, you know, Gene, you said something really bad there. You said it's outside the borders. Okay, so is Guam, but nobody ever denies that Guam is part of the U.S.
Well,
now,
and Guantanamo is technically part of the, well, kind of, sort of,
industry. If Gitmo is not part of the U.S., I'm sure Castro would love to take it back.
Well, as I understand it, see, we keep sending him rent checks, and he doesn't cash them. So,
you're either pregnant or you're not.
I'm not. Gene, how about you?
it's like that with territory. It's either part of the U.S. or it's not. If it's not, it belongs to Castro.
Well, yeah, and he would like it back. That's why he isn't cashing the rent checks. But it's like, what's his choice there? It would be to go ahead and go to war over Gitmo, which...
That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is, if the United States is saying, this is not our territory... Wait a minute here. We don't, in that case, we have just said we don't own that part of Guantanamo. We don't own that part of the island of Cuba.
The part and parcel of this is the legal fiction that is involved with it all, Susan. Gitmo is a lease. We've never claimed ownership. We're only leasing it. And so it is not U.S. soil. Frankly, it is. If you want to get really technical about it, Guantanamo is occupied Cuba.
True.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change. It doesn't change anything, because if you go back as far as Thomas Jefferson, he makes it clear that the principles of the Constitution, as he understood it, was to apply to Americans abroad, and was to apply to non-Americans on American soil. And yet,
yep,
these legal geniuses like Scalia and Alito, yeah, the little beady-eyed dude, they say that the Constitution clearly does not apply to a non-American citizens, and it doesn't apply outside the territorial boundaries of the United States, and we believe it's that way because, we said so, and we just kind of make it up during cocktail hour.
That sound you heard was Jefferson turning over in his grave.
I know.
Why don't we start calling these people what they are? Legal mobsters.
Well, yeah. Among other things. There's nastier things we could call them, but it's a little too early in the program, I think.
That's true.
I mean, it's only... It's not even 4 o'clock where you guys are yet, so I can't use the fun words.
Mugglers, I don't know.
Well, that's why I bought the entire DVD collection of the series The West Wing. That way I can watch a White House that behaves the way it should.
Yeah, a sort of a fantasy White House.
Yeah, you know, if it gets too much, I can go off into fantasy land and watch President Bartlett.
Who's
surprised?
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
It gets bad. It's
sad that you have to look to a TV show for what could what you would hope that the United States government ought to be.
Yes.
For competence.
And has been. And that thing about the, you know, well, like we talked about it last night, about deliberately letting New Orleans drown. I mean, oh, Jesus.
Yep, still been no criminal charges. No. There's been some criminal charges. We charged a doctor and some nurses who stayed at their posts at great hazard to themselves and tried to keep people alive. People did die. They got, you know, they got charged for that, but they were acquitted. The jury just looked at the prosecutor and said, what, are you crazy?
Yeah.
But, charging the people who actually caused the deaths, not in Bush America. Not in Bush America.
Guys, I gotta go let the dogs out. I'll talk
all right.
to you later.
Well, I'm gonna
go too and let other people on.
All right. Y'all take care.
Okay.
You
all right.
Too.
Thanks
good
for thanks for climbing up on the porch.
Thanks.
Well,
bye-bye.
I shall climb down carefully.
All right, bye now.
Go back to my laundry. Bye bye.
Bye. I like this idea. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun with it as time goes on. Because everybody hears everybody else one at a time. And, you know, there's a lot of interplay for those. You know, if you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, avail yourself of it. It's fun. It's not, you know, it's serious. It's lighthearted. Sometimes it's dancing bananas. But it's a great place to hang out. It's a great place to talk about issues during the show. You know, I'm not some sort of, you know, hard ass. No. Everybody, no. You can only talk about what I'm talking about. That's not what this is about. You know, other talk radio with screeners and so forth. You know, Big Eddie Schultz says, "Oh, I don't have any screeners." Yeah, and the check's in the mail. And the other big lie. Agnes, why do you whisper, honey? Yeah, old blues, the screener here. No, but the thing, no, it, you know, it, what you get is, you know, a fellow will call up and say, I wanna talk about the conspiracy of the fluoridation of the water, and another will call up and the screener will sit there and decide who goes A, B, C, D, E based on how close it is to what the host is talking about. God knows Rush Limbaugh is not nearly smart enough to be able to multitask and bang around through a series of subjects. If you've got to be on topic with Rush. Bang, 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 bang. And the same thing applies to Hannity Job. And the same thing applies to O'Reilly. And the same thing applies to the Savage Wiener. And Bortz, that guy who sounds like an intestinal problem. You know, you've got to be on their wavelength. Because they're too elite. They can't be bothered to be on yours. Well, that does not obtain here. I will let you take this program anywhere you want it to go. One at a time or all at once. So, you know, the idea of the front porch is that you hear each other singly. Well, I will sit here and facilitate a conversation amongst us all. Just like used to happen in America. Bunch of people sitting around out front of the general store. Old men sitting around at the barber shop. I'm told one of my grandfathers, you know, the barber in town, was a Republican. And of course, my grandfather, he'd sooner just jumped off a cliff as vote for a damn Republican. And so they would aim. You wonder where I get this? You wonder where this comes from? I am told that my grandfather on a Friday or whatever. When things were slow at the car lot, would pick up a pint and walk over to the barber shop, and he and the barber would nip at that pint and argue with each other for the rest of the evening. And you know what? That's American. No razors were drawn, no fists were thrown, just sitting there cussing and discussing what it means to be an American. Where America's going. And I'll guarantee you, you know what? I will guarantee you, that old Republican barber, even though he was a hateful old Republican then. That old Republican barber would be absolutely, utterly horrified at what his Republican Party has become today. I have no doubt of it whatsoever. So that's, you know, that's the idea behind the front porch. Jump in. Bring your own topics. They don't have to be earth-shattering. They don't have to be something that's even on the radar screen. Because you never know when, you never know where great ideas are going to come from. You never know where the issues are going to develop until you start talking about them. Right? Yeah. So, Agnes, swing the microphone over there to the guitar player. We'll take a little break. We'll come back after the news. You got 5 minutes to line up and fill up four lines. 877-443-2366 or 304-658-5453. Either one will get you through. Get you up here. Jump into one of the rocking chairs. Sit back. Get a swaller from the jug. Beats the hell out of eating with somebody else's chopsticks, doesn't it? At least that alcohol will kill anything that ails you. This is the Front Porch, America's Front Porch on the Head On Radio Network. Shucks, I'm just Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. military commander in the southeast region of Iraq says it would be, quote, a giant step backward to pull out U.S. troops from the region by the end of the year because the Iraqi forces are not ready. Yesterday, Republican Senator John Warner, just back from a trip to Iraq, said he recommended to President Bush that he start a U.S. troop pullout by Christmas. According to today's report in the Los Angeles Times, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, is expected to recommend a troop reduction in Iraq of nearly 50%. Also, according to the U.S. military, since the troop surge occurred, the number of Iraqi detainees held by the U.S. in Iraq has now gone up by 50%. There are now 24,500 detainees, most of whom are Sunni Arabs. In Afghanistan, three British troops were killed by a bomb dropped from a U.S. fighter plane. They were taking part in a NATO operation against the Taliban. A Marine drill instructor in San Diego has been charged with 225 criminal counts of physically abusing recruits. Two other drill sergeants have also been charged in that same case. NFL player Michael Vick filed a plea agreement today in which he admitted to bankrolling a dogfighting ring. However, the NFL quarterback denied that he bet on fights or helped to kill pit bulls. He'll formally enter his plea in federal court in Richmond, Virginia. That'll be on Monday. The U.S. won't block former Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega's extradition to France. French authorities accuse him of money laundering and more. In Jackson, Mississippi, the elderly Ku Klux Klansman James Ford Seal, recently convicted of murdering two black teens 43 years ago, he was sentenced today to three consecutive life terms. Seal was convicted in June for the double murder committed back in 1964. More thunderstorms have hit parts of the Midwest, already soaked by rain. A strong storm blasted the Chicago region late yesterday, knocking down trees and damaging buildings. The U.S. Forest Service says it doesn't have enough money to clean up the trash left behind by park visitors. 40% of the agency's budget goes to fighting wildfires. And the iconic Big Mac, invented in a Uniontown, Pennsylvania McDonald's, turning 40 in celebration of Big Mac Museum, has just opened. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A report released yesterday says astronomers have discovered an enormous blank spot in the universe. It's described as 6 billion trillion miles of emptiness. Scientists say they have no explanation for the phenomena. A study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition finds that fear of new foods may be inherited. The research involved twins who were questioned on their willingness to give those new foods a try. In the past year, sales of the so-called morning after pill have nearly doubled. That's after the federal government decision to allow anyone over the age of 18 to purchase the emergency contraceptive without a doctor's order as long as they have proof of age at the drugstore. New home sales were up 2.8% last month, according to the Commerce Department. Sales improved in the West and South, but decreased in the Northeast and the Midwest. In July, the median price for a new home in the U.S. was $239,500. Light sweet crude oil has been trading above the $71 a barrel mark today, currently trading at $71.09 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold trading at $677.50 an ounce. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 143 points at 13,378. NASDAQ up 35 points at 2576. S&P 500 up 16 points at 1479. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lou.
Lordy, I do love it so. Front Porch Friday, right here on Head On. I'm old Bob, down here at my feet's old blue. It's about 5.5 minutes after the hour. You know, one of the things I love, and I do mean love, about the Internet, that series of tubes, is... if you wait long enough, and some sort of old Asian philosophy or something, and I don't mean old Asian, the idea wasn't developed by an old Asian, it's just been around for a while. That old saying about if you wait by the river long enough, sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by. Well, it applies to the Internet too, because I've been wondering all along, yea verily, and forsooth, I've been wondering who that senator was that Chicken George referred to in his speech to the veterans of foreign wars a couple of days ago. You remember when he went and said that we never should have left Vietnam? And what he meant by we, I don't know, because he never went to Vietnam, so, you know, what you mean we, Paleface? You and that mouse in your pocket? But he made a statement about, what was it, yeah, here it is. He said, after America entered the Vietnam War, the Graham Greene argument gathered some steam. Matter of fact, many argued that if we pulled out, there would be no consequences for the Vietnamese people. In 1972, one anti-war senator put it this way: what earthly difference does it make to nomadic tribes or uneducated subsistence farmers in Vietnam or Cambodia or Laos whether they have a military dictator, a royal prince, or a socialist commissar in some distant capital that they've never seen and may never heard of. It was notable because he would not name the senator. And his unwillingness to name the senator, who said that allegedly in 1972, set off alarm bells all over the country. Who's he talking about? And why won't he name him? Well, do you know now? Do you know? Let me look in the chat room just to check. You guys know who the senator was? because I've found out, I found a great column today by Greg Mitchell over at Editor and Publisher, his column, Pressing Issues. Good writer, Greg Mitchell. But, you know, who was that? Well, it turns out, and you know, as for why he wouldn't say what it was, who it was, rather, you knew it had to either be A, a Republican, or B, someone who is so thoroughly respected that the mere mention of his name would negate the argument in the first place. Somebody who got it right about Vietnam, that he's quoting as being wrong about Vietnam, when the whole world looks up and goes, yep, he nailed it, nailed the dismount. Well, it wasn't a Republican senator, but it was a senator of profound note from that era. And I, again, this is from the column by Greg Mitchell there at Editor and Publisher. Someone had written to him, an individual by the name of Anthony Banks of Toronto, who went out and found where the quote came from. It comes from it comes from a book by William Fulbright. That's right, that William Fulbright. William J. Fulbright. The book was called The Crippled Giant. Now, here's the full context. George, of course, Chicken George, used only a little bit of it to try to make his point. And unstated, in the way that Chicken George put it, was that these comments about Vietnam are the same as a comment about Iraq, which they're not. Here's the full comment. Nor does it matter all that terribly to the inhabitants. From pages 92 to 93 of the first edition of The Crippled Giant, 1972. Nor does it matter all that terribly to the inhabitants. At the risk of being accused of every sin from racism to communism, I stress the irrelevance of ideology to poor peasant populations. Someday, perhaps, it will matter, in what one hopes will be a constructive and utilitarian way. But in the meantime, what earthly difference does it make to nomadic tribes or uneducated subsistence farmers in Vietnam or Cambodia or Laos, whether they have a military dictator, a royal prince, or a socialist commissar in some distant capital that they have never seen and may never even have heard of. But there's more than that. Senator Fulbright, who has scholarships, fellowships named after him, yeah, that Senator Fulbright, really smart guy, he went on. He said, at their current stage of undevelopment, these populations have more basic requirements. They need governments which will provide medical services, education, birth control programs, fertilizer, high-yield seeds, and instruction in how to use them. They need governments which are honest enough to refrain from robbing and exploiting them, purposeful enough to want to modernize their societies, and efficient enough to have some ideas about how to do it. Whether such governments are capitalist or socialist can be of little interest to the people involved, or to anyone except their incumbent rulers, whose perquisites are at stake and their great power mentors fretting in their distant capitals about ideology and spheres of interest. Is it just me, or what's in that to fight about? But of course, having George Bush read a quote of that length is a ticking time bomb for any speechwriter. You know, our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com and your RDA of irony, which you're not, if you're not signed up for, you're just, I don't know why. It's not like it costs you anything. He's a speechwriter, and he if you go and search through your RDA of irony, you'll find out a little bit about speech writing and the most and the least and the worst that a speechwriter can hope for. And I can't imagine what it must be to be a speechwriter for George W. Bush. To sit there and work with and know, and you know, first of all, you're a speechwriter and you know that you are limited to words of no more than three syllables. And that you are limited to simple subject, verb, predicate, sentence structures. And so this Fulbright quote gets thrown out there, devoid of the stuff that was around it. And now we see why. Because it makes perfectly good sense. Because if you take the paragraph that Chicken George referred to, and you append to it the paragraph that follows, you find out that Fulbright was correct not only about Southeast Asia, but about undeveloped nations and societies in general, and without ever intending it, specifically about Iraq. Perhaps more tragic about Iraq was the fact that prior to our occupation of that nation, prior to 1990's Bush War I, there was some degree of development in that country. Rather than burqas or hijabs or anything like that, a woman was free to go to school. A woman was free to take a job in society. She was free to pursue a career as an academic or a scientist or a teacher or a mother or virtually anything that society had to offer. Shucks, she could even wear pants. Well, those days are gone. What was left of those days ended in March of 2003 when George Bush said, you know, he tried to kill my daddy. And we screwed up Iraq again. Iraq had a level of development that, in many ways, Vietnam did not have, and about which Senator Fulbright was writing when he said, at their current stage of undevelopment, these populations have more basic requirements. Well, Iraq wasn't starving before the sanctions, before the depleted uranium, before all of that horror. They were, in terms of the Middle East, fairly well developed. God knows they were well armed because we armed them. The words of Senator Fulbright, they need governments which will provide medical services, education, birth control programs, fertilizer, high-yield seeds, and instruction in how to use them. That applies to Iraq now, doesn't it? Unfortunately, the fertilizer and high-yield seeds that are being provided to Iraq come with contract stipulations that say that the farmers can't save seed and they have to buy every year from Monsanto, and they can only plant one variety of Monsanto genetically modified wheat there in the place where wheat first grew. If you do wait long enough, the evils that fall out of the mouth of George W. Bush do catch up with him. God knows you won't see this. You won't see Perky Katie Couric prating on about this. Oh no, no, no! And it won't come out of the mouth of Charlie Gibson. And Brian Williams will be as silent as the tomb about this. And God knows that. Oh, what's his name? Creepy guy, Britt Hume. He won't have anything to say about it over at Fox News. George Bush just got busted. And he got busted on the pages of editor and publisher. What's to argue with? I love the way Senator Fulbright puts this in 1972, because he knew what would happen to him the instant he said it. I stress the irrelevance of ideology to poor peasant populations. Okay? Now, before he said that, however, he said, at the risk of being accused of every sin from racism to communism, because right-wingers then behave much as right-wingers do now, only the right-wingers now are even uglier, stupider, and meaner. At the risk of being accused of every sin from racism to communism, I stress the irrelevance of ideology to poor peasant populations. And isn't that true? Whether you're in Vietnam or Iraq, or, as we may find out in a little bit, Darfur, you're not particularly concerned with what ideology the guy in the capital city ascribes to if you're worried about whether your babies will live through the winter because the crops failed. Is the baby going to be a dead Marxist? If the baby is a dead capitalist, is the baby any less dead? You and I know the sane and reasonable answer. On the other hand, Greg Mitchell points out that in the book George Bush cited, The Quiet American by Graham Greene, The Quiet American, the CIA agent, helps orchestrate. And, you know, this is one of those, you know, calling Dr. Freud, Dr. Freud, Dr. Freud, calling Dr. Freud, emergency please, moments. Because the character favorably cited by George Bush, who turned out to be the villain of the novel, the Pyle character, he orchestrates a terrorist bombing in Vietnam that kills scores of innocent peasants. And the protagonist asks him, the protagonist, Fowler, asks the American CIA guy, Pyle, how many such terrorist deaths he would accept in, quote, building a national democratic front. Pyle responds, quote, Pyle is the American. Anyway, they died in the right cause. They died for democracy. Now, our good friend Guy James, I think yesterday, pointed out that George Bush in his speech said democracy something on the order of 22 times in his speech to the veterans of foreign wars. Does democracy matter to the 750,000 dead innocent Iraqi civilians killed since George Bush declared shock and awe? I'm not making a value judgment for or against democracy. I'm asking if it matters to the dead. Now, while I realize that there are those, only good Marxist is a dead Marxist. And while I realize there are Marxists out there, the only good capitalist is a dead capitalist. It's easy to say while you're still breathing out and breathing in again. But if your baby has been blown into constituent parts, does one ask whether the bomb was Marxist or capitalist? You know, you point out the deaths to right-wingers in Iraq, and, well, there's been a lot of deaths, but, you know, that's because them people won't quit fighting amongst themselves. They weren't fighting amongst themselves before we invaded, you know? Jesus. They died for democracy. And, of course, we're told that about our dead, too. They died building democracy. And now we're hearing that suddenly there are people in the government who don't like the Maliki government in Iraq. And yet these, I thought we got, it was all ballyhooed. All, Jesus, it was an orgy on the news channels with women all dressed head to toe in black robes instead of, you know, like pants like they used to get to wear, holding up their purple finger. Because democracy had done come to Iraq. To the Iraq. And they elected a government, and the government in turn selected its leadership, and Maliki became what, prime minister? All under our tutelage. Right? Yeah, all under our tutelage. But now we've decided that the Iraqis chose wrongly, that they screwed it up because they picked the, you know, they bet on the wrong horse. Meanwhile, Iyad Alawi, who was thrown out of the interim Iraqi government, has recently been revealed to have paid $50 million? Have I got the number right? Somebody straighten me up. I could be wrong. Maybe it's $15 million. To Haley Barbour's lobbying firm with options to extend the contract for Republican Haley Barbour's lobbying firm to do PR and advance image control and promotion of Iyad Alawi as the guy who replaces Nouri al-Maliki. Question one, he was thrown out of the Coalition Provisional Authority. Where did he get the money? Could that be part of the money that was thrown out that was lost in the sofa there, the 18 semi tractor trailer loads full of bundles of $100 American bills? Could Mr. Alawi have made off with a few of those shrink wrapped footballs, do you think? Follow the money. This is the payback. He got a few of those Benjamin Franklin footballs, but the nature of the deal is such that he has to give some of the payola back. It's called a kickback. It's dirty when it happens in business here. It's even dirtier when the kickbacks are soaked in the blood of American soldiers. But Haley Barbour's firm's going to get them some, and they're going to measure it in millions. I may have the number wrong, but they have been hired, and they've been hired for a bunch of money to manipulate the political process in Iraq that we were told our soldiers had died for. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's just the front end. Fascinating blog post over at Maha Blog as well. The Power of Right-Wing Myth. We'll talk about it maybe here in a little bit, but there's a brilliant quote in it. And he begins, the Maha Blog writer, I say he, I don't know, the Maha Blog writer begins by pointing out that right-wingers and Republicans are like that episode, this is the obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, from Star Trek The Next Generation, in which Picard has to learn to communicate with a Tarassian, or I forget what the... I don't know. No, that's from Heavy Metal, Tarassians. Temarians. Not Tarassians. Tarassians ride killer pigeons. With the Temarians, Picard has to learn to communicate with them. Because they keep looking at Picard going, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Timba, his arms flung wide. You damn dummy, don't you understand? Everybody knows Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. And it turns out these people speak in metaphor. And everything the Republicans talk about is metaphorical. This is a brilliant article, Maha Blog. Look it up. But in this blog post is a quote from a letter that the real Winston Churchill, who was nothing like George W. Bush, wrote to the real Prime Minister David Lloyd George in 1922, telling him to cut and run in Iraq. Quote,
"I think we should now put definitely, not only to Faisal, but to the Constituent Assembly, the position that unless they beg us to stay, and to stay on our own terms, in regard to efficient control, we shall actually evacuate before the close of the financial year. I would put this issue in the most brutal way, and if they're not prepared to urge us to stay and to cooperate in any every manner, I would actually clear out. That, at any rate, would be a solution. At present, we are paying $8 million a year for the privilege of living on an ungrateful volcano out of which we are in no circumstances to get anything worth having."
And that's the guy they say is a lot like George W. Bush. I'll be damned. Brilliant article, Maha Blog. And we'll go down that road in a little bit. We're halfway done with tonight's program. Mighty quiet here on the front porch. But that's all right. Me and old Blue. What's that, Blue? What'd you say? Oh, poor old Blue. Did I rock over on your tail? Me and old Blue just going to sit here on the porch. That's all right. You know the phone number if you want to come on up. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own hook, 304-658-5453. Time to get another swig, I think. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Blues falling down like hell. Blues falling down like hell. And if they keep worrying me, there's a hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail, hellhound on my trail.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union says immigration raids in St. Paul and Lumberton, North Carolina this week demonstrates once again the failure of the U.S. immigration system. The UFCW says, according to eyewitnesses, ICE agents forced women to leave their children, arresting workers in the dead of night. The UFCW says these raids are no substitute for comprehensive immigration reform. The union believes they're a tragic form of political theater that devastates communities, breaks up families, and defiles fundamental American values. The California Nurses Association has decided to take one of their most important issues to Iowa in an attempt to impact the candidates as they try to win the January caucuses. Jesse Russell has more.
On the heels of an announcement by the Iowa State AFL-CIO that they support a single-payer health care plan, the California's Nurses Association has launched a series of ads in that state calling on Democratic candidates to do the same. Shum Preston with the National Nurses Organizing Committee says that the top-tiered candidates have proposed half-baked health care plans.
Have the guts to stand up for a health care plan that will actually solve the problem instead of just making it look like they're trying to solve the problem.
Preston said that registered nurses support the single-payer model because the for-profit model just doesn't work.
When you have the for-profit insurance companies taking 30% of care dollars off the top for their overhead, there's no way we can guarantee health care for all Americans.
He added that the nurses will continue to hound the candidates until the top tier wakes up and realizes that they are out of step with most Americans.
They are basically all describing much more of the same. And that's a problem for them because poll after poll finds health care to be the most important and most pressing issue.
You've probably never heard of it, but the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America is sort of a super NAFTA deal to harmonize trade, economic, military, security, and energy policies between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. It's being created by the executive branch leaders of the three nations and a council comprised of business CEOs without any say by Congress, Parliament, or Mexico's legislature. Julia Wielebrand co-chairs the International Committee of the U.S. Green Party. She says workers will be hurt by this as corporations consolidate and increase their power, moving to erode labor protections.
This issue is incredibly important. It's incredibly important to every working person in the United States.
In an era where nearly everyone has personal information stored online in one way or another, news of hackers stealing that information is old hat. Jobs website Monster.com is the most recent victim after the information of 1.6 million users was stolen, including phone numbers, postal addresses, and names. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
Think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
I got kicked off of Noah's Ark. I turned my cheek to one kind remark. There was two of everything, but one of me. And when the rains came tumbling down, held my breath and I stood my ground. And I watched that ship go sailing out to sea. Take it back,
Agnes hates John Prine. That was a real sacrifice for her, and I appreciate her. Pulling out the good stuff on Front Porch Friday here on the Horn. What do you mean, don't even? Somebody rocked on your tail at the same time they got old Blues.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, see, she gets old Blue in the settlement if we ever decide to go our separate ways. She's already told me. She gets old Blue and Alex and the grandbaby. She's got a list. Now, this, I got to tell you, I've read stuff at Maha Blog before. And it was impressive. But this one just blew me away. And it's at mahablog.com, MAHABLOG.com. And the thing that's impressive about this blog is that not only is the blogger intelligent, but the people responding to the blog are very intelligent, and it's pretty much troll-free, and the blog post actually seems to create a train of thought that gets followed and moved along, which is kind of rare in blogging, if you ask me. This is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant analysis of the psychosis that is the right-wing mindset. In fact, I don't know if he's listening, but if our good friend horn psychologist Rick Goodner is listening, I would love to see or hear his thoughts. Again, the title of the post is "The Power of Right-Wing Myth." And it starts off with a quote from Glenn Greenwald. Boy, I tell you what, we just really shouldn't have put so much gin on my salad this evening. Regarding Bush's Vietnam speech and other manglings of history, Glenn Greenwald wrote last week on a different note. These are Greenwald's words. In the curriculum for history classes in some American states... Okay. We may just play guitar music, slide guitar music for the rest of the night, because I can't talk. On a different note, is the curriculum for history classes in some American states restricted to learning about Hitler and the Nazis and 1938 and Hitler and Germany? It must be, Greenwald writes, because there are many right-wing fanatics whose entire understanding of the world is reduced in every instance to that sole historical event, as though the world began in 1937, ended in 1945, and we just relive that moment in time over and over and over. I will editorialize, like some sort of twisted Groundhog Day with a swastika. Love war, Greenwald writes. You are Churchill, a noble warrior. Oppose war? You're Chamberlain, a vile appeaser. And everyone else is Hitler. Everybody. That, more or less, composes the full scope of thought among this strain on the right. And that is the launching point for the author at Maha Blog's essay regarding Darmok. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Temba, his arms wide. For those of you who aren't Star Trek fans, I don't expect you to get it, but you would still benefit by going and having a look at the blog post itself, mahablog.com. But, the stunning quote from Winston Churchill about getting the heck out of Iraq is in this post. And the writer goes on and says... I call today's righties the Reagan generation because so many of them are Gen Xers, Generation Xers, whose first memories of politics and national events involved Carter and Reagan. They weren't so much taught politics as imprinted with the Reagan mythos. For them, all Democrats are Jimmy Carter, an archetype of wimpy passivity. Reagan represents confidence, action, sunniness. The two of them together represent opposing forces that tell the entire story of American politics. Nothing more needs to be understood or thought through. Democrats bad, Republicans good, end of argument. The actual persons of Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan were far more complicated than the Carter and Reagan archetypes, of course, and they both have had their virtues and flaws. Today's righties have forgotten the Reagan and Gorbachev signed the INF treaty story, which is referred to in the article in which none other than Newt Gingrich vilified Ronald Reagan as being the American version of Neville Chamberlain at Munich. They also persistently, the writer says, overlook Reagan's raising of taxes after he lowered them, and his quick skedaddle out of Lebanon after he helped cause the Marine Barracks tragedy. Helped? He did cause the Marine Barracks tragedy. What's important to them is not what Reagan actually did as president, but what he represents emotionally and mythically. Because you see, the right wing, the conservatives, they're not interested in facts. They're not interested in anything that you and I would put under the broad philosophical heading of truth. You know, revelations reached and conclusions discovered based upon an examination of facts. It's all metaphor for the ripigs. It's all analogy. It's all this being like that and unlike the other. It's Sesame Street. You know, some of these things are just like the others. One of these things does not belong. And the thing that does not belong is liberals. So, go and have a look at this. I think you're just going to be terribly, terribly impressed. The piece concludes, "We lefties sometimes persist in trying to reason with righties. I've given up, mind you, but there are those who still try. But I say this is futile. As with the encounter between the Enterprise and the Temerians, we don't understand each other's words. We want what's best for America, we say. And they holler, Chamberlain and Hitler at Munich! Sam Waterston and John Malkovich in Phnom Penh, FDR at Yalta!" And there's good humor here, too. Perhaps they would listen to us if we convinced them we were channeling the spirit of John Wayne at Iwo Jima. I love good writing when I find it, and that is some damned fine writing. So do yourself a favor and go over to Maha Blog and take a look at The Power of Myth. No, I'm sorry, that's Joseph Campbell. The Power of Right Wing Myth. But it's all mythology. The entire framework for the Iraq War was mythology. It was a mythology of a big, scary dude with a mustache who was working, you know, right out of the Warner Brothers cartoon with the castle on the hill and the neon flashing light. That's a mad scientist, boo, working on a nuclear weapon. And we were told that we couldn't wait for a smoking gun because the next smoking gun might be a mushroom cloud. And none of it was true. We were told that aluminum tubes were being used for centrifuges, when in fact the aluminum tubes were being used for weather balloons and quite possibly fence posts to keep the goats in. We were told that he had mobile weapons labs, mobile chemical weapons labs. Nope, weather balloons. We were told he was a bad man who gassed his own people, but it turned out we sold him the gas. Lie after lie after lie. I can't even be charitable about it. It's a myth, all right, but the myth is grounded in utter, absolute, unmitigated prevarication. Mendacity. Lying! Ooh, they're lying again! And the lying continues. Now, you may have listened to the program the other evening when our good friend David from Maine called in talking about Bob Baer, whom I am originally confused with the guy who played Jethro on the Beverly Hillbillies. But that was Max Baer. Bob Baer, who claims, you know, CIA street cred, who says that we will attack Iran in the next 6 months. At which my redneck nature wants to just use words that Agnes won't let me use on the air. And I don't need to use on the air. I have recently been reminded, as a matter of fact, that some people listen to this program with little children in the room. And that what's 6 p.m. on the East Coast is not 6 p.m. on the West Coast. And funny little words that aren't allowed to appear on the radio probably ought not to appear on the Internet either. Just because it's no fun trying to explain to a two-year-old why MF is not an appropriate word to use. So I won't use the fun words. But Baer did, in fact, say, oh, you know, my CIA contacts are telling me for sure, no doubt about it, we will be attacking Iran in the next 6 months. And I just find that horrifying. But it gets worse. Agnes, do you have the clip there of Captain Kangaroo Bolton? Because in order to follow up on the Bob Baer story, Fox News, who has as a host Bill Hemmer, who used to work at CNN, but I don't know, I guess they were just too liberal for him, so he took a job at fake news. He interviews Michael Bolton, or John Bolton, I'm sorry, so one's a saxophone player, another one's a freaking war criminal, and he's talking to the war criminal, and asks him what he thinks about what Bob Baer has said about the imminent likelihood of an attack on Iran. Now, we're going to play this, but I would prefer if you were sitting down and weren't near anywhere near anything that you can throw. Go ahead, Agnes.
The Bush administration reportedly deciding to designate Iran's Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization. So what does that mean, huh? Well, according to the former CIA operative Bob Baer, it means the U.S. could be gearing up to launch some sort of military strike on Iran. Bob Baer was here yesterday morning. Listen.
Iran policies on close hold, but the feeling is we will hit the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps sometime next 6 months.
Well, that would start another war. Is the administration up for this, Bob?
Well, it's a war. Is what the administration is convinced of is that the Iranians are interfering in Iraq and the rest of the Gulf.
Well, that certainly got our attention, so we asked John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., for his take on that today. Sir, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Bob Baer says within 6 months, his sources informed him that there will be a strike on Iran. You agree with that?
Well, I don't think one can tell one way or the other. I don't think there's any doubt, based on the information we have, that Iran is interfering in Iraq and is posing a direct threat to our troops. So I think President Bush, as commander-in-chief, believes that information is accurate. He is fully entitled to take defensive measures, which
there we
could
go with
include
the believing
going
again
after the Revolutionary Guards inside Iran.
One final step here, too, that I want to take with you. You told one of our producers earlier today that you don't know if it's true, and you made that clear in our interview here, that you know what the odds are or are not against that. But you hope it's true. Why do you hope it's true?
Absolutely. I hope Iran understands that we are very serious, that we are determined they are not going to get a nuclear weapon capability. And unless they change the strategic decision they've been pursuing for close to 20 years, that's something they better factor into their calculations.
Okay. You down with that? You got that? I don't know if it's true that we're going to attack Iran, but I hope it is. And I'll have some Iranian livers with a nice Chianti and some fava beans. I said Michael Bolton was a saxophone player. I was thinking of Kenny G. But John Bolton is still a war criminal. Michael Bolton's a singer, you know, with the frizz, but he's got the fuzzy hair like Kenny G. That's why I was But John Bolton is still a war criminal. John Bolton is hollering for war with Iran for no good reason. And I say that it's no good reason because they keep saying, President Bush obviously believes this, believes that the Iran Revolutionary Guard is messing and meddling around in Iraq. We're messing around and meddling in Iraq. Oh, but we get to. We're the white people. But the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is providing IEDs to the Iraqis that they're using on the American... Yeah! Okay, let's assume for a moment that that's true. What are our good friends the Saudis doing? Again, I refer you to the today's BartCop page. Bless his heart. From time to time, I find that Bart and I do think alike. What was it, yesterday, that I pointed out that news came down that the American helicopter had fallen out of the sky and killed 14 American soldiers as a result of mechanical failure, and I pointed out that just like heart failure is always a cause of death, mechanical failure is always a cause of any aircraft going down. Mechanical failure can, however, frequently be caused by, you know, things like artillery rounds getting stuck in the drive shaft. So, bless his heart, we were on the same wavelength again. And there's Bart pointing out, reminder, the chopper exploded due to mechanical problems for sure. It was not a Saudi rocket. Is that clear? The Saudis are our friends. They would not arm their Muslim allies with the weapons that we had sold them. No, they would never do that. Reminder, the chopper exploded due to mechanical problems for sure. It was not a Saudi rocket. Is that clear? It was mechanical problems, not a rocket the Saudis got from Bush. It was a mechanical problem. Repeat that, just so that's clear. Mechanical problems, not Saudi rockets. I love it when I'm on the same page with other brilliant people. I really, really do. But we're not talking about invading. We're not talking about invading Saudi Arabia because of their participation in the Iraqi insurgency. No, 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 no. We're talking about invading. That's right, Iran. Why? Well, we've already got Saudi Arabia's oil. We've got a deal with them. But if we could get control of the Iranian oil fields. Oh, that's better than liver with a nice Chianti and some fava beans, isn't it? Do you still hear the camel's clarice? Let's go to the phones. Jeff is joining us from Washington. Hey, Jeff, welcome aboard. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Good. I just wanted to commend you on your great show yesterday, and I haven't listened today because I usually podcast your show in the morning before I get to work. 5:30 a.m. on my drive in, I download your show, and I appreciate the podcasting ability. And I just donated to Head On Radio. So.
Oh well, thank you, very kindly, Jeff. You know, it's great to hear from people who do listen via podcast because most of the calls we get are from folks who are listening live. But I love to have the interchange with folks who are listening a little bit later. Just because, you know, 24 hours can make a load of difference in whether or not the show made any sense at all.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah, I'm a welder, and so I appreciated your insight on all the steel aspects today. It was particularly pertaining to my industry and everything, as far as the pipes coming out of China, and it was just a really amazing show and your insight on going to your dad's work, because I just had my 3-year-old son at my work.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So it really kind of touched a nerve, and I really appreciated it.
Well, where the Chinese pipe is concerned, I mean, do you see that stuff?
Yeah, actually, I do. And I was talking to a fellow coworker at break about your show, and I was just like, wow, a pretty amazing show. And
well, did you get to go and see the photographs that Clyde posted over there at WD-40?
No, you know, I tried to Google search it, and then I got into getting on your site. And
well, you know, a lot of people
and everything.
We mention the site quite frequently, but it's you got to spell it out: DUBYA, and then the letter D, and then 40.com, WD40.com. When you see those photographs, Jeff, being someone who is in the industry, I have a feeling you're going to be horrified.
Really?
Because it wasn't necessarily my genius, but far more it was the information and expertise of that Clyde brings to it in pointing this stuff out, because it's his industry, too.
Yeah, and you interpreted that very well, so I appreciate that as well.
What he points out is that this the pipe that you see split in the photographs, we're talking about catastrophic failure of a piece of pipe. What you see in that photograph, according to Clyde's article, was actually stamped "Made in the USA."
Oh, I know. That's what was pretty flabbergasting. It was crazy. I know. You know, I weld pipe and handrail for various, you know, staircases and stuff like that. But now it seems like sometimes I'll be welding along and it'll just, you know, the pipe will just explode because there's some kind of, you know, different type of metal in there or something that was...
And when you say explode, you mean explode, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, just basically pot metal type material has somehow gotten into the mix. And when you're talking about specifically that gas line that broke, you know, you were talking about, I believe it was a 13-inch pipe at 1.5-inch diameter, and your guest was touching on this subject as well, but he said, you know, it would take a heck of a lot of pressure to break a pipe like that for a gas main at 150 pounds of pressure. You know, I mean, it seems really peculiar that a pipe, because all that stuff is overspec'd as well. And I'd like to bring up the fact that I never used to see, you know, steel shapes coming from China, like ship channel and stuff like that. But just recently, in the past couple of years, I've seen the channel coming from, you know, like ship channel and stuff coming from China. And it used to be just pipe, you know. I started seeing pipe coming from China about 5 or 6 years ago, you know, like an inch and a half diameter, you know, just standard wall pipe.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's infiltrating more and more. And I'm from you know, Portland, Oregon, where we have Oregon Steel Mills, which just got bought by the Russians about a year ago or 6 months ago or something. And, you know, I can really... relate to how you talk about how the steel industry, and I'm not sure it's just you, but Joe Vecchio listened to him, and basically, you know, the steel industry in the United States is just non-existent by American owners anymore. It's really a sad state of our military readiness and ability to just, you know, the whole manufacturing industry. I mean,
yeah, it's and that's what I was trying to get at. It's not just steel. It's shoes, it's shirts, it's,
yeah.
For heaven's sakes, it's shoelaces. We are far more crippled than we are prepared to even have a beginning of contemplation. We would be really, really in a mess if we were called upon to need our industrial base.
Yeah, I mean, that China, you know, the baby bottle story and stuff. I have a 3-year-old son, and when I heard that, you know, I mean, it made sense. You know, before that, it was the Teflon pans. You know, they had the Teflon pans from China that were supposedly the nonstick pans that were leaking all over. And, you know, I cook for my kid with Teflon pans. I shouldn't. I should know better now. I'm going to buy some stainless or something. But,
iron skillets.
You
iron
know,
skillet.
And the same thing. Same thing with the baby bottles, and you know, I ride my bike a lot with a water bottle.
But what do you, you know, what are you going to do for a plastic bottle or a baby bottle or anything like that? I would hazard a guess that you could probably go to every shop in Portland and not find one made in the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it becomes we've become a captive economy in a way, Jeff. Not in a way, in actual truth, and it's disturbing as it can be.
Yeah, it is.
And it's not, again, I want to emphasize, it's not because it's from China or from anywhere else. It's because it's from an economy that doesn't know how to maintain safety standards.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say that you've seen more and more of this stuff. That correlates, as far as the pipe's concerned, that correlates with Clyde's numbers going from 10,000 tons in 2002 to 690,000 tons last year. That's
I mean, there's only two plants that are a couple, two or three that are in the United States available to make military industrial steel, and one is right here, Oregon Steel Mills, and it just got bought out by Russian interests. So, you know, and this is a prime donor to OPV and to, you know, community functions, and I thought it was pretty sad to see that, you know.
Well, that's scary. That scares me as much as Dubai Ports buying our port facilities.
Yeah, it is, and it's a growing reflection of what's happening all over throughout in, you know, all kinds of manufacturing industries, and it's you know, the totality, you know, as a whole. I'm just speaking in regards to steel, but geez, it boggles the mind sometimes.
Well, Jeff, it's so good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again. Don't be a stranger. Even even if it's only on Fridays, because maybe you don't have to have the commute on Saturday morning.
Yeah, the reason why I podcast your show is because I listen via my mobile phone while I'm, you know, at work. So,
oh, wow, I love that.
It's hard for me because my reception breaks up, you know, when I'm moving around with my phone in my pocket or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't stream you live, but I sure would if I could.
But you can grab the podcast that way. That's amazing. I love this technology, and I love the way that folks are using it. So, you know. If other people hear you saying that you can do that, maybe it'll encourage them to do the same.
Yeah, you can do it. You can stream on mobile phones nowadays if you're within city limits, and you get the internet on your phone. And that's what I do.
That's just too neat.
It's great because it's not just music. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's something that maybe has a little bit of meaning to it. Jeff, thanks so much.
And the horn is great because I'm a working folk, and you know. I appreciate it.
Well, we're really glad to know that you're there. We truly are. And, you know, best of luck raising your 3-year-old son. And I guarantee you that as you take him and let him see what it is that Daddy does for a living, I'd bet you 100-1 that's going to stick with him like you can't imagine. And it's going to mean something to him down the road that would just surprise you to know how much.
Well, thanks for the kind sentiments. And I really appreciated the show yesterday. It really touched my heart. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, and have a great weekend, all right?
All right, you too, buddy.
Bye now.
We'll see ya. Bye.
Wow. That just blows me away. You know, that's another one of those why it's worth it to do this moment. And the neat thing is, 3 hours a night, I get a bunch of them. It's not like going to the golf course where, you know, you have one good drive in 18 miserable holes. I get time after time after time affirmation of the value of what goes on here at the Horn. And it sort of it goes a long way to getting you up to go and do it again. Makes me proud. Makes me proud. So we'll go and we'll do the news. Hey, it's Front Porch. You know what Front Porch Friday means. Jump in if you want to. Okay? Okay. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's Front Porch. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network.
Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick has been officially suspended from the NFL indefinitely, just hours after filing court papers in which he admitted to bankrolling gambling on dogfighting and helped to kill some dogs judged to be not fight-worthy. Vick will formally enter a plea in a Virginia federal court on Monday. According to today's report in the LA Times, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, he's expected to recommend a troop reduction in Iraq of nearly 50%. Also, according to the U.S. military, since the troop surge occurred, number of Iraqi detainees held by the U.S. in Iraq has now gone up by 50%. There are now 24,500 detainees, most of whom are Sunni Arabs. The U.S. military commander in the southeast region of Iraq says it would be a, quote, giant step backward to pull out U.S. troops from the region by the end of the year because the Iraqi forces are not ready. Yesterday, Republican Senator John Warner, just back from a trip to Iraq, said he recommended to President Bush that he start a U.S. troop pullout by Christmas. In Afghanistan, three British troops were killed by a bomb dropped from a U.S. fighter plane. They were taking part in a NATO operation against the Taliban. A federal judge has ruled that former Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega can be extradited to France. Noriega will serve up to 10 years in prison for money laundering there. In Maryland, the man who shot Alabama Governor George Wallace is preparing for release after serving 35 years in prison. Prison officials say 57-year-old Arthur Bremer has been a model prisoner. More thunderstorms have hit parts of the Midwest already soaked by rain. A strong storm blasted the Chicago region late yesterday, knocking down trees and damaging some buildings. On Capitol Hill, at least one Senate panel will investigate the cave-in at Utah's Crandall Canyon coal mine. Efforts to reach six miners trapped in the collapse have been so far unsuccessful. Three rescue workers were killed there, six injured in those attempts. The U.S. Forest Service says it doesn't have enough money to clean up the trash left behind by park visitors. 40% of the agency's budget goes to fighting wildfires. And you are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news that's just ahead. But first, this message.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
Space Shuttle Discovery is grounded until further notice, at least until foam covering brackets on its external fuel tank can be removed. Discovery is expected to make its scheduled launch on October 23rd. The FDA is proposing stricter requirements for sunscreen lotions to protect against UVA rays, which are associated with serious long-term skin damage. New home sales were up 2.8% last month, according to the Commerce Department. Sales improved in the West and South, but decreased in the Northeast and the Midwest. In July, the median price for a new home in the U.S. was $239,500. The Commerce Department reports that big-ticket factory orders were up nearly 6% in July. That is the largest increase in 10 months and more than analysts had expected. A 17-year-old New Jersey teen claims to have broken the code that ties the new Apple iPhone to the AT&T wireless network. He claims he is using the iPhone on T-Mobile's network. Light sweet crude oil has been trading above the $71 a barrel mark today. It is currently at $71.09 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 143 points at 13,378, NASDAQ up 32 points, the S&P 500 up 16. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Our
second weekly incarnation of the Front Porch here at the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know, as this progresses, I've had some conversations with our good friend John Fox, who plays a mean acoustic slide guitar. And he really will be at some point, we hope, the guitar player over on the far South Pacific end of the front porch that is the horn. The only thing is that means him being up at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that really bites. But, you know, John's another one of those guys who doesn't leave anything on the field, plays it out every time. He's getting a little vacation right now. I would imagine, let's see, yeah, they're on the way. He and the lovely Gail are on their way to the rainforest area of New South Wales, an old gold mining boom town called Mogo. Sounds like something from a W.C. Fields movie. Old case of Mojo on the go-go. What's that from? The Bank Dick, yeah, yeah. All right, well, it's coming up on 15 minutes after the hour, and Bob is joining us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Did I make it to the front porch?
Come on up on the porch and grab a rocking chair and try not to rock on old Blue's tail.
Well, I don't bother old Blue. It's not what I do. I love old Blue. I've got hound dogs in my past, and I've got memories of beautiful hunts and wonderful people, but it's kind of sad, you know, to be just chat a friend and thinking that maybe if we had a front porch, a real front porch, you know, like, hey, where you go out there and your neighbors stop by and say hello, and,
yeah,
you know, and you could talk politics or you could talk religion or you could talk anything you want to talk, you know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, my grandfather going to hang out with that god-awful Republican barber like he used to do.
Yeah, well, I stopped going to the Republican barber. I used to take William to. I just said, hey, that's enough of your, you know, CRAP, you know, and now we go somewhere else. And it's sad because we used to have a barber. Hey, when William was a baby, he didn't take a liking to going to hairdressers. We took him to all kinds of places to where he got his hair cut, and finally we found a barber that could do it, and Mike was the best. He really was. He was, you know, like William just, hey, he just sat up in the chair, got his hair cut, and got it done, and, you know, it wasn't like it was a Samson and Delilah thing, you know what I mean, where he was losing all his strength. He was, hey, he was a, you know, hey, he wasn't, it wasn't hurting him none, you know.
Oh, there's a home movie out there, Bob, of something on the order of maybe 2-year-old little me getting the first haircut. It's an ugly sight, I tell you. Bawling, terrified, scared to death, and they handed little old me a little old red sucker, and the hair fell all over it, and that just made it worse.
I've got thousands, or well, hundreds anyway, hundreds of photographs of William at every barber shop that he went to when he was a baby. I'd bring my camera along and I took pictures, and I've got oh my goodness gracious, and the faces that they make. I mean, it's like they're terrified, you know, and you're trying to calm them, and you're, you know, doing all the, you know, like you said, bringing out the little the cookie or the sucker or whatever the barber tried to
mollify
them with.
Yeah.
Yeah, bribe them with by, you know, hey, you have this, it'll calm you down. You, well, hey, how about impeachment? Impeachment would calm me down. It would make me feel a whole lot better if we could just speak of that word. I mean, if the United States Congress, the House of Representatives, and the Senate would speak of the word, what is it, impeachment, children, my children. It means every human being that is a citizen of the United States of America under the Constitution thereof.
Yep.
And that's all there is to it. I miss some, you know, some dear friends. I really do. I think about them, and I think about this sadness that has come up on us. It's a sadness deeper and more than any other sadness that has ever come upon us. It is worse than that, what do they call it, civil war?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Bob, I would be remiss. Well, you and I haven't talked since Chicken George went to Kansas City.
No.
And gave his little chat to the membership of the VFW. And I would be remiss if I did not ask you your thoughts, because, frankly, your thoughts and your opinion on this probably have a little bit more weight behind them than anything I could say.
Okay.
His comments on Vietnam, his comments on the whys and wherefores and why, if we should have left or why we shouldn't have left and all that, it would be wrong for me not to ask you your take on that. So, you know,
okay.
Take it away.
All right. You want to know what I think of George's, what do you call that, pontificating, okay?
Yeah.
Or prancing? Prancing's better, because he was prancing around like a prima donna. He was prancing around like he had knowledge of Vietnam, like he really had been there, and he was telling these veterans, these men that had actually been in, I don't know if they were all in combat. I doubt very seriously that any of them had actually served in a combat unit, because that's one of the things that the G.W. Bush administration absolutely will not allow before them is a combat veteran. They will not ever speak plainly or honestly with us. They twist things around corners, and I would bet you, I'd bet you that jug you got sitting there on the front porch,
mm-hmm.
that every one of those veterans that he vetted before they came before him had actually been what we used to call REMPs. You know what a REMP is, Bob?
No, please tell us.
Is this a secure network? Is this one where if I use profane language, I will not cause you to have to pay a large dividend to the repuplicans?
No, it won't cost me anything. And Agnes has taken off her headphones so as to...
okay.
Yeah.
A REMP.
Rear echelon. Got it.
Mother.
Got it. Yep.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Yep. A REMP.
A REMP. And these REMPs that stood before that man have no courage, and they never have seen their brother die. They never held him in their arms.
But what about? But Bob, let me ask you with particular emphasis on what Bush said. He was particular in making hay, or trying to make hay, out of some sort of idea that maybe we shouldn't have left when we did, and trying to tie that to trying to get out of Iraq now. Did you ever run across any of those people who thought that, you know, gosh, if we just stayed there another 5 years, we could have finally won? Did you ever meet any of those people, Bob?
Bob, the only people that have won that war were those that never served in that war. Those of us that actually were in Vietnam know what we had to do to stay alive. All we were doing is surviving from day to day, like the boys and girls in Iraq are doing right now. The only thing they're doing is trying to stay alive, to get home, and to have their family say, you did what you had to do, and we're proud of you. But when we came home from Vietnam, we did not have ticker tape parades. We didn't have that that Gulf War One syndrome. We didn't have that. What we had was you came home and you were taken to a secure base, and there you were instructed on how to move across the country on your way home, and you were told, well, you guys got short hair, and you're kind of, like you don't fit in. So we would suggest that you go down here to the PX and buy one of these cheap made in China wigs, and you can get some long hair and then get some of these flowery shirts and do not travel, on the airwaves or on the airlines unless you are dressed properly. And so what I did, Bob, is I went to a haberdashery and I took a good chunk of my Vietnam money that they wouldn't pay me while I was in country until I came home, and I bought a real business suit kind of thing, and I got myself one of them little bowler hats like James Bum used to wear, and I kind of dressed myself up as if I was kind of in crowd people. And I went to the airport, and I had a military, kind of a standby ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Because some of my buddies, they put on these wigs, and they got these hippie looks on them, but I dressed myself as if I were part of the establishment. And I tried to blend in as kind of a, they didn't have any more room in the standby seats kind of back there in the coach. And they stuck me up there in first class, Bob. They stuck me in first class. My first taste of first class was because I tried to make myself different than what they told me to work myself into and be one of the boys. And that's where I figured it out. If you go along, you will get along, and if you pretend to be one of them, you can actually get inside. And that's where I got inside, and I figured it out. It is not that you are better than they or they better than you. It is you have to take a look at them and then camouflage yourself, just like we did in Vietnam. We used to, we found out what Charlie could do, Charlie was, he was perfect at camouflage because he was part of that culture. He was part of that nation. He lived there. It was his home. He knew how to blend in. And this is our home, Bob. This is our nation. So we blend in. And I think that Hillary is doing a pretty good job of blending in right now. People curse her. They cuss her. They call her names and try to take her down. But so does Obama, He's blending in. So maybe we should back some of these people that are trying to camouflage themselves to get inside, because maybe there's one of them that really does feel what we feel and knows what we know. If we think outside of the box, because damn it, Bob, they got us in a box. Think about it. They've had us in a box since 2000.
Well, Bob, let me share with you, and I'm sure he did not go there. He was not in Vietnam. Paul Begala, you know who he is?
No.
Yeah, he's a pretty staunch Democrat. He's kind of DLC-ish, but, he's a Democrat. Mm. And in regard to George's speech in Kansas City, he said, Bush is saying, essentially, that 58,000 dead in Vietnam weren't quite enough, that maybe we should have twice as big a tragic memorial on the Mall. And who's saying it? A man who chose not to serve, took steps, used family, friends to get out of serving in Vietnam, didn't even show up for his own guard duty so that better, braver men could fight that war.
You could be closer if you said 59,000.
Yeah.
You could be closer if you said 60,000, okay? they are not all the dead Vietnam veterans, because, Bob, some of us lost friends that are not, never will be proclaimed on that wall. It is a fact that more people died in Vietnam than they acknowledge to this day, and there are more people dying in Iraq that will never be acknowledged. They will never even be acclaimed for their patriotism, for their heroism, for the love of country that they gave their lives for, and their names will never appear before you or any other American, because if they told the truth of how many of us died there, then these neo-Nazi fascist pukes, these repuclicans, these filthy bastards since Nixon, before Nixon, in fact, they were plotting, planning, and they have done a GD good job, because they have us, and we don't even understand how easily they took us down. In the United States of America, either we take it back, Bob. We got to take it back. We got to. We have no choice. We are the VC right now. We are that piece that piece of the puzzle that they cannot imagine. They can't even understand. They can't even think about it, because if they did, then they would be with us. Because this country, we did horrible things to get this country to become what it is. Bob, you're a Southerner, and I'm a Northerner, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I live in the North, but of course, North Dakota didn't exist during the Civil War, right? But I live north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
And you live south of it, correct?
Not by a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, but during that day, they had an imaginary line they called the Mason-Dixon line. Oh, goodness gracious, Bob, there's no line. I mean, I can drive up here to Canada and cross the border and go up there to Saskatchewan or, you know, whatever. But soon, that imaginary line will divide two nations, the United States and Canada. It will divide us by an imaginary line that was drawn up to separate people. That is their only goal, Bob, to separate the people. They're not trying to separate themselves. They know who they are. They have their little game. They're separating the Iranians from the Iraqis, from the Afghanians, from the people from Dubai. They're trying to separate us from our humanity, Bob. They're trying to stop us from. They're trying to make me think that everybody in Iraq is a gook, is a gook, is a dink, is a wog, is a something, is a target.
Haji. Haji.
A Haji. Well, they get a same game. Bob, it's the same game. They keep trying to separate people from their humanity. And, Bob, I met Iranians. I've served in the service with them. I've met Iraqis. I've done business with many, many cultures and many, many people across this globe. And I know only one thing, Bob. We, the human race, must accept one another or become a statistic. Statistic. How many Jews? 6 million Jews, 12 million others. 57 million died in World War II, Bob. 57 million. What does it have to be in George Bush's World War III? Does it have to be 58 billion or maybe just enough so they can have their way with the world?
Okay. Well, Bob, let me bring a couple more folks on. Let's see. Susan's joined us, and Preston's with us from Denver. Hey, hey, Susan. Hey,
hey,
Preston.
Hey, Danny.
Hello.
Hey, Susan. How are you, love?
Love you, Danny.
I love you too. Hey, girl, you hey, you do it right. You think right. You got your ducks in a row. Yeah, and you got your aluminum cap on.
Most of the time.
Huh? Hey, Preston, what's going on?
Hey, Bob. Just enjoying the conversation as always. Hi, Bob in North Dakota.
Well, hello there, Preston. I never spoke with you before, sir.
Likewise, and I've really enjoyed.
I am honored. I am honored.
Me too.
To speak with a fellow member of the liberal left. I am honored to speak with you, Preston. I really am.
Me too.
Wonderful. I mean, this thing that Bob's doing.
So, Preston, what was on your mind this evening?
Well, Bob in North Dakota, what he was just saying about how they continue this game of dividing us from each other made me think of an author that they have named Robert Spencer, who has written several books on dehumanizing Arab people, their faith, through criticizing their faith.
Mm-hmm.
His most recent book is called Religion of Peace, with a question mark, Why Christianity Is and Islam Is Not. Before that, it was The Truth About Muhammad, founder of the world's most intolerant religion. Before that, it was The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam. Before that, the
kind of a one-trick
Islamic
pony.
Tolerance.
Yeah, he's kind of a one-trick pony, isn't he?
Exactly. It's amazing. He just goes on and on. It's
propaganda,
almost
the worst order.
It sure is.
That's interesting you would bring that up, Preston, because I'm looking at a news story here out of Florida. There's a televangelist down there whose name is Bill Keller. He has up until recently been the host of a program called Live Prayer with Bill Keller, and the TV station that sold him time has thrown him off because of his constant rants that Islam is a 1,400-year-old lie from the pits of hell. That's one of his quotes. And his reference to the Muhammad as a murdering pedophile.
Oh, good grief.
And he called the Quran a book of fables and a book of lies. Now, this show has been pulled, but guess what? He's coming back September 3rd. This time he won't be at 1 a.m. He will have a morning TV show on another Tampa Bay area station.
Jeez, that's a shame. That's a shame.
You know, even
there's more of a shame in those that listen to the drivel.
You know what I called in about?
What's that, Susan?
I am dreadfully ashamed. You know, my husband's a vet of two wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I am mortally ashamed that it appears that not one person got up and walked out of that speech.
I don't think we have any way of knowing, Susan.
Thank you, Susan, for the truth. Your husband is a veteran, and I would be proud to meet the man. I truly would. But Bob,
why is the VFW?
Because
him on this.
Well, you've got to remember that, and I forget where I saw it today. Preston, you may have seen this too. A handbook got leaked to the press from the White House. That tells people how to seat people in a group for an appearance of the president, and you have to have the very most extreme loyal Bushies nearest to the president, and then they also create roving gangs of supporters who have signs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And if someone should happen to protest, those roving gangs are to immediately begin screaming at the top of their lungs, USA, USA, USA.
Right.
I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up.
No, I know you're not. I've seen it.
But
you know, what about just getting up and leaving? Or for that matter, why is the VFW, all of these people have bought overseas, why are they supporting
Susan, one moment, please, okay? Bob hit the nail on the head. He hit it on the head. These people are hand-selected. They are checked out. They are in, you know, they're inundated. They are loyal bushies. He hit the nail on the head. These are rimps. They are not combat veterans. They are not men that fought in a battle or have suffered at the hands of any administration. These men were the guys that got the what they call them back in the NAM. They had them cookie socials where they had them ice. They call them, I don't know, they had these, they talked about them. I never met one. I never saw one of these ice cream dollies that used to, you know, give off USO cookies and stuff like that. I never met one. Not in all of
my time. That's because they were too busy servicing the officers behind the building.
They were doing it for those rimps. And that's what I'm speaking of. And your husband wasn't a rimp, I'm sure of that. You remind me so much of my dear Glenda. She knows me better than I know myself, and she tries sometimes to calm me down. It is hard to calm down in these days. It is very, very hard because I watch, and I'm watching dear hearts, wonderful people, being led astray.
Yep.
And the truth is, those VFW members that were before George the
well, to be fair, that VFW meeting was also addressed by Senator Clinton, and I think a couple of the other heavy hitter presidential candidates were there as well. So,
but Bob,
no, Preston, I thought you were going to say something there for a minute.
Well, I guess there's also a financial pressure as well. You know, I think some people are afraid to speak out against the war for fear of being, you know, losing a rank or being denied a benefit, or, you know, there's always that concern as well.
People just
trying to convince themselves of things, rationalizing things that they did, and they're clinging to that rationalization because they fear if they let it go, you know, there's just going to be all sorts of uncomfortable truths. It was interesting. I heard one veteran call into the Dr. Laura show.
Ooh, Dr. Laura Schlesinger?
Yes.
Oh, your poor eardrums, Preston. I feel so bad.
I tune in every now and then.